Hello, welcome to today's Pin Talk, Modernizing the 403B. I'm Beth Parker with Pintegra. We're glad you joined us today to hear about what plan sponsors are doing to streamline the management of their ERISA retirement plan. Before we begin the presentation, there are a few housekeeping items that I want to go over. If you have any questions, please submit them through the question box located on the control panel on your screen. We'll answer as many questions as time allows, as we want to ensure we are respectful of your schedule and end on time. If we don't get to your question during the presentation, we'll definitely follow up with you afterwards. Stored on your control panel in the handout section are resources from today's presentation that you may download now or at any point during the webinar. Let's get started. I'm excited to introduce Pete D'Angio, Pintegra's National Director of Not-for-Profit Markets. Pete has 25 years of industry expertise in the 403B marketplace. He is Pintegra's resident expert in the tax-exempt and not-for-profit arenas, and recently helped to launch one of the country's first closed 403B multiple employer plans. Pete, thanks for hosting our talk today. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Beth. I appreciate the introduction. And good afternoon, everyone on the call. Thank you for taking time out of your day to visit with Pintegra. We do appreciate it. As Beth mentioned, I've spent my entire career working in the tax-exempt, not-for-profit 403B market. I've been at Pintegra for almost 7 years, and prior to coming to Pintegra, I was at TIAA for 18 years. And during that time, I've had literally hundreds of conversations with 403B plan sponsors, and through those conversations, both with the plan sponsors and their advisors, we know that they have four significant concerns. And those concerns are listed here. Those concerns are that they are worried about meeting their fiduciary responsibilities. They're concerned about the costs associated with their plans and managing those costs appropriately. They're also looking for ways to streamline plan administration. And as always, 403B plan sponsors are historically altruistic, generous institutions, and have always been very mindful of participant outcomes. So to be able to provide positive retirement outcomes for their employees is still a main concern. But also, I'd like to share a perspective that I've seen over the last 10 years. Really, over the last 10 years, we've seen the 403B marketplace grow up. Really, it's grown up, particularly after the 403B regulations were enforced. It went from a marketplace where there was traditionally minimal plan sponsor involvement, and perhaps you can call, you know, potentially describe it as a laid back approach to oversight by regulators, combined with limited market penetration by advisors, till today, 10 years later, to a marketplace that looks more like its big brother, the 401k marketplace. And if plan sponsors weren't concerned with their fiduciary responsibilities and costs prior to 2016, the blitz of fiduciary litigation that came during that year certainly opened their eyes. Since the summer of 2016, about 20 schools were sued over alleged fiduciary breaches within their 403B plans. Name schools like Duke, Northwestern, MIT, NYU, Vanderbilt, Emory, Johns Hopkins, extremely large plans. And also, this continues to be in the news, and Beth handed me just before our Penn Talk this afternoon that a third university has settled their excessive fee suit. And actually, Vanderbilt has joined both Duke University and University of Chicago in settling their 403B ERISA excessive fee settlement suit. Just so you know, University of Chicago settled for $6.5 million, and Duke University announced a $10.65 million settlement. So while these schools are very large, and these plans are very large, the feeling in the industry is that the door has been kicked open to future litigation and has really put all 403B plan sponsors on alert. Digging a little more deeply into the alleged fiduciary breaches within these 403B plans, as you investigate and look into each one of these lawsuits, you'll see that the fiduciary breaches are common from lawsuit to lawsuit, and they include that plan sponsors have failed to leverage assets to negotiate lower record-keeping fees, particularly, again, in these large plans, but also where you have a 403B plan sponsor that has multiple record keepers. If you have more than one record keeper, you're probably not getting the best deal from either one of them. Other breaches include the inclusion of costly investment options, traditionally annuity-based options, which are more expensive. Also, we're seeing breaches including plans offered excessive investment options, leading to confused participants, and also maintaining or retaining, I should say, underperforming investment options in their 403B menu. So at this point, I'd like to turn it back to Beth for our first poll question, Beth.
Right. So we thought it would be interesting to see, get your opinion, your take on which allegation you think is most likely to be dismissed of the four that Pete talked about. Which one do you think is most likely to be dismissed? And we'll keep it up here for 10 to 15 seconds. Let everybody kind of put their answer in. That's good. We see PSC people voting, so that's good. And we'll share the results before we move on here and give it about 10 more seconds and see if we can capture the rest of these votes. Good. Okay. I'm going to close it and here we go. Let's see. Now I'll close it and we're going to share our results. Let's see what we all think. All right, so about 5% of you think the inclusion of costly investments is most likely to be dismissed. 15% of you think failing to negotiate lower fees. 25% think underperforming investment options. And 55% think that plans offering excessive investment options is the one most likely to be dismissed. What do you think, Pete? Did they get it right?
Well, 55% of them did. It looks like we have a smart bunch, and so basically that's exactly right. The claim that's most likely to be dismissed is a plan that's offering too many investment options. That's really not a fiduciary. They felt that the decision in terms of offering too many funds. It was dismissed from almost half the cases that had a fiduciary breach case alleged against it. Interestingly, that type of breach you don't see in a 401k type of lawsuit, and that may have led to its dismissal because that's something that you haven't seen traditionally in a 401k lawsuit. So thank you, Beth.
You're welcome.
So you start to think about what the 403B industry looks like. You have a maturing 403B market where plan sponsors are beginning to deal with increased fiduciary responsibilities combined with the increased administrative burden placed on them by the final 403B regulations. And not surprisingly, some of these plans are struggling. When we look at a 403B plan in terms of compliance, typically we find mistakes almost 100% of the time. But what we do see is that some of the top issues listed here. Very common, we see universal availability issues. Surprisingly, we see even mid-sized plans with missing discrimination testing. And then one that's often that we see is the definition of compensation in the plan document is not followed. So we do see issues with administration. Just give you a quick example, a plan that we recently have taken over, there was a universal availability issue. The plan sponsor elected to use one of the exclusions, not allowing employees that basically were part-time to make their own contributions. So while the plan indicated that certain people couldn't make their own contribution, it wasn't actually followed that way, and they let individuals make contributions that were in this excluded class. Therefore, it resulted in a VCP, or voluntary correction program filing, and then a corrective contribution as well. So we are seeing increased fiduciary litigation. We're seeing struggles with administration, and it's starting to make these 403b plan sponsors nervous because there's dollar amounts associated with these issues, as we see by the settlements and the fees and fines penalties listed here. In that case, the VP of HR quoted this back to me, and after we told him about the VCP, a filing fee, as well as the correction contribution, the quote was, "The cost of non-compliance is more than the cost of compliance." So the feeling out there is that they know that this stuff is out there, and they're beginning to have some anxiety. So what's a possible way to address or streamline these concerns and the management of the retirement plans? Well, one of the ways that we're doing this, and what we're seeing some adoption in the industry as of late, is the 403b multiple employer plan. The 403b multiple employer plan is a way that plan sponsors can relieve many of the administrative and fiduciary burdens that are associated with running their single retirement plan, one that delivers a comprehensive solution that can lower both costs for the institution as well as the employees, but also still driving and achieving better than previous retirement plan outcomes, so improving services for the employees as well. So how does it work? How are we seeing this work in the 403b space? Well, what we'll see, particularly in the 403b space, is that just like in the 401k space, a multiple employer plan is a single 403b plan with multiple adopting employers coming into that single plan. But when you start to see the characteristics, you can see why it's appealing to the 403b market, where there's a single plan document now. And that single plan document provides a significant amount of administrative efficiencies, but also drives costs down because now you have one plan sharing one document, sharing the cost for restatement, sharing the cost for amendments. But what's also important to note in the 403b space is that each of these schools still have the opportunity to maintain their plan design within certain parameters, even though they're joining the multiple employer plan. The multiple employer plan will have centralized governance, a concept they're familiar with. It's analogous to their investment committee today, but where you have one adopting employer from each 403b plan sponsor sitting on the board, and that board allows for the efficient appointment of fiduciaries. The real gasoline in the multiple employer plan engine is the pooled assets. You know, why would a $10 million plan want to join a $200 million plan? Well, the idea is that they know that they have some fiduciary heat on them based on looking at maintaining costs. So they see this as an opportunity to collaboratively come together, aggregate assets, and to more effectively negotiate with their 403b vendors, both record keeping, administration, and advisory services. And finally, there's centralized administration as well. Again, we just briefly reviewed the administrative struggles a lot of these schools are having. They do not want to retain these fiduciary responsibilities in terms of administrative work. They can outsource those via the MEP by bringing on one centralized fiduciary administrator that administers the entire 403b multiple employer plan arrangement. So at its core, the 403B MEP is very simple, but as we have these conversations with 403B plan sponsors, it gets a little more complicated. And having these conversations in the field, I can tell you where we're ending up. So if there's multiple adopting employers coming into a single plan, the question we always get is, well, who's the plan sponsor? In the multiple employer plans that we're working within, it's been a co-sponsorship arrangement. One thing you need to keep in mind is that a 403B plan needs a 501c3 plan sponsor. ERISA 3.5 says that that plan sponsor could be a single employer, in this case, a single 501c3 organization, or it could be a group of employers, in this case, a group of 501c3 organizations. So what we've seen traditionally happen in a closed multiple employer plan, 403B, is that we're seeing a group of 501c3 organizations that all belong to the same association co-sponsoring the multiple employer plan. Well, if there's co-sponsorship, who's in control? Within the multiple employer plan, as I mentioned, there's centralized governance. So we have a MEP board that is in control, and that MEP board is made up of one adopting employer from each non-for-profit or school or 501c3 organization that joins that board, typically with one vote each. Well, who are the named fiduciaries if the MEP board is in control? If you were to stop here, and if you created the MEP board, they would actually be the fiduciary. They would be the named plan administrator, and they would actually be the fiduciary responsible for investments as well. Well, we think that's a terrible idea. Why would you go through all this trouble creating a multiple employer plan and then retain fiduciary responsibilities? So what the MEP board does, it allows, as I mentioned, efficient appointment of professional fiduciaries. So let me show you how that would work. So along the bottom, you see that the MEP board appoints service providers as well as plan fiduciaries. So the MEP board would appoint the record keeper. In a closed MEP, there'd most likely be a single record keeping agreement with the multiple employer plan. But again, now based on the aggregated assets, therefore at a better cost than they could get on their own, but the record keeper would maintain those traditional roles of call center, website, quarterly reporting, records, statements, et cetera. The MEP board would then appoint a 316 fiduciary administrator, which would be named in the document as the administrator, which would be responsible for operational compliance of the multiple employer plan, including all the administration that usually is associated with being administrator, including filing a 5500, et cetera. The MEP board would also hire a 338 plan advisor, therefore effectively outsourcing the investment oversight capacity to a professional discretionary money manager, but then they would also appoint a participant advisor as well to help provide additional unbiased education on site to supplement what's being currently provided by the record keeper, therefore creating those more beneficial participant outcomes while meeting with an independent registered investment advisor. So again, all these pieces are interchangeable, meaning that the board owns those decisions and can make those appointments. So again, as mentioned previously, there is significant concern about the risk associated with their 403b plans, the fiduciary risk associated with their 403b plans. Most plan sponsors inherently understand the risk associated with their investments, with their pricing, with their fees, as seen by these lawsuits. But they don't understand that there's also risk of not maintaining or operating your plan compliantly. Obviously, the individual who had to make those fixes on the universal availability scenario that I gave you wasn't aware of the fees, fines, and penalty and fiduciary risk associated with maintaining that plan. So a way that plans today are looking to streamline the management of their plan and outsource the risk and outsource the work is A, by joining the MEP, but then also by appointing a 316 fiduciary administrator whose name would be in the plan documents as the fiduciary administrator, replacing that school's name, that museum's name, insert, 501c3 organization there, giving them significant peace of mind that they're no longer the fiduciary in charge of the administration of the plan. But I think they instinctively understand more, not only is their risk reduced, but it's their workload. These 501c3 organizations are typically budget constrained. They have smaller benefits offices. They don't have the bandwidth to run their 403b plan. So if you can outsource that work to a 316 fiduciary plan administrator, that is a significant win for them. So over the years, the 403b marketplace has seen a significant uptake in the use of 403b, 338, 321 investment advisors. And those players are starting to consolidate based on expertise. And as the market evolves, there are certain advisors that see the benefit of the multiple employer plan in terms of being able to deliver a solution to smaller 501c3 organizations, to mid-size 501c3 organizations, that makes it more cost, it makes more cost sense to them. They can actually provide it at a better price by working through the multiple employer plan. So the multiple employer plan appoints a 338. Most likely that 338 can do it more economically, more efficiently, because that multiple employer plan shares one investment policy statement with everyone in that 403b multiple employer plan. That 338 advisor has to go to one committee meeting now to share his IPS and give updates and monitoring one time instead of 15 times throughout an association or a group of employers. So it's just a way to make these services even more accessible in a more cost-efficient way to these 403b plans. As I mentioned at the beginning of the Penn Talk, I've been associated with 403b plan services for my entire career. And if there's one thing that 403b plan sponsors always want more of, it's always they want more on-site education. The record keepers do a good job of providing this service, but there's always seems to be an unsatiated need for more. So a good way to approach these non-for-profits is the idea of providing more education to supplement the record keeping education and providing it from a registered investment advisor that could provide not only advice on their retirement plan assets, but also on a holistic financial plan. So I've been to, I said, hundreds, dozens of these meetings. I'll go on about 338, I'll go on about 316, and I get a lot of head nods. But when you talk about additional on-site education, that's really when I think plan sponsors really start to understand the benefit of including all these services together and enhancing participant outcomes. So why use a MEP? It's simpler, it's safer, it's more cost effective, and again, it's less work for these plan sponsors, all of which make it a really effective way to streamline their management of their 403b plans. All these organizations kind of know that they have an issue. They need to know, they know they have a couple steps need to do to fix it. The 403b map allows them to fix it all in one motion. So where are the assets? If you were to look at the 403b market right now, higher education dominates, and they actually are taking advantage of the MEP construction to collaboratively address these issues that we're seeing. And I think part of that is the litigation that we're seeing that's driving some of these decisions. Besides health, higher ed, you see healthcare. Healthcare MEPs being constructed. I don't know if they'll ever be as popular, if that's the right word, in a closed MEP perspective. You might see more aggregator solutions in the healthcare space because often healthcare associations or organizations are diverse in their IRC code. You may have a 403B, a 401A, a 401K, a non-ERISA 403B. So to create a closed multiple employer plan in the healthcare associations or organizations may be more difficult than you see in potentially higher ed. In my own crystal ball, looking forward, I think the higher ed multiple employer plan strategy is being adopted and it's starting to pick up momentum. I think it's going to be moved down market and you're going to see groups like museums and foundations and organizations that fight world hunger starting to come together and build multiple employer plan solutions. And I think the K-12 private market is perfect for a 403b closed MEP application because typically they're well-funded, well-heeled organizations with folks on that board that are in the community, in the business community, and make, I think, more or quicker business decisions than maybe some of their higher ed counterparts in terms of buying decisions. So I've mentioned associations a few times. So you know where the funds are, right? We know where the plans are. What's the best way to start bringing these plans together? It's the way is to go through the associations. Each of those market sectors have associations. And what's really nice about approaching associations, what they do just maps really well over to what a multiple employer plan can do. They understand the power of working together. They understand the sense of community, how each can help each other. They're used to working on boards. These associations have boards. They understand the benefit of bringing in outside experts to help them. Almost all these folks have limited budgets. They want to hire fiduciary professionals, but often the cost prohibitive on their own. Coming together will allow, through a MEP, will allow them to access these services more cost effectively. And let's face it, they'd rather be doing something else. They didn't start they didn't join a non-for-profit that feeds the world or promotes world literacy or displays works of art so they can sit in an office and manage their 403b plan. They'd rather be doing something else, and that appeals to them. If they could have this all done through the multiple employer plan, it's really appealing. So really in closing, I just want to show an example recently that Pentegra was involved in that we were proud of and believe was a really successful venture here with the Council of Independent Colleges, where we had over 15 private universities in Virginia come together to create a multiple employer plan and deliver and execute really exactly how I described it previously, reducing record keeping costs, outsourcing administration, outsourcing fiduciary work, bringing on an independent 338 advisor to share one IPS, and hiring an educational firm to enhance the on-site experience. So With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Beth to see if there's any questions. And I just noticed it's exactly 2:30, Beth. I didn't plan that, but it worked out very well.
I know, it did work out really well. So we do have one or two questions that have come in, so let's try and get these answered. And then, again, if anybody else has any questions, you can go ahead and submit them. We'll get back to you with the answers. And just a reminder, you can download right now from the control panel a copy of the presentation and a copy of the white paper that Pete showed in the prior screen, or two screens ago, his white paper on associations with 403Bs. So let's look at the first question. When wouldn't a MEP be a good fit, Pete?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think you have to look at every situation differently, right? So when is a 403B MEP not a good fit? We've approached particularly schools across the country where they've declined to enter a multiple employer plan, and potentially because, A, they either have scale on their own, right, where maybe they're a large enough plan that they're commanding good pricing anyway. And I think that, coupled with the phenomenon where maybe they have some sweat equity in it, Beth, where they've put a lot of time working on a committee and hiring a 338 and doing some of the things that their brethren haven't done. Maybe they've already done it and don't feel like undoing it to join a MEP.
Okay, second question says, can there be a lead sponsor, or could the sponsor be a single employer in a MEP?
Okay, interesting question. So we're always bound by one certain truth, right, in the 403B space. So it has to be a 501c3 plan sponsor, right? So if you're looking at an association and they happen to be a 501c3 association, they could be the lead employer and sponsor the 403B plan. We've had situations where the association would rather not be the plan sponsor, and there's not one employer in the association that really wants to be the lead employer. They'd rather have it shared. So that's why we did a co-sponsorship in a lot of these situations where there's co-sponsorship of 501c3 employers. But you could do either, it's got to feel what the association or the group that you're working with can do and wants to do.
All right, let's see if we can get one more question in. How do you address annuities in a plan when joining the MEP?
Quick question, but one that is significant. So I could take it a couple different ways. I think what they're referring to, and I'm glad this question came up, is legacy annuities or individual annuity contracts. So in that case, if we're talking closed multiple employer plan, which is really what 100% of my comments were aimed at today, is that employer would get a new contract for the multiple employer plan. All new money would flow to that new contract. But remember, I'm using the word contract and not plan. So now you have a multiple employer plan with a couple different contract types, with the new mutual fund-based MEP contract and legacy annuity contracts. So when the 5500 is done for that MEP, it includes all the assets, even though only the new assets are flowing to the MEP contract. So they're part of the MEP, but they're just sitting there for 5500 work, and they can be used at Record Keepers for aggregation of assets to determine pricing.
All right, we still have some more questions coming in, Pete. Let's see if we can get a few more. And how would a closed MEP work with a church 403B plan or with QCCOs?
Okay, good question. What we've seen in the field is that if it's going to be a single multiple, a single plan, right? A multiple employer plan with one IRC code, right? It's going to be a 403B ERISA multiple employer plan. So what will happen is all plans that have that are ERISA 403B based can enter into that closed multiple employer plan. With the non-ERISA QCCO stuff, that would have to be a second plan. And that could be either a second multiple employer plan, or it could be more of an aggregator solution where you just each plan retains their own independent single plan status, but kind of benefits from the joint assets from the association. So all very real possibilities, particularly obviously when you're dealing with 501c3 organizations.
Okay, very good. I think in the interest of everyone's time, we had said we were going to end right around 2:30. I know we've gone a little bit over. If we did not get to your question, we'll definitely follow up with you via email today or tomorrow. So thank you, everyone, for joining. Pete, thank you for hosting our talk today, and hope you can join us for our next FinTalk.
Thank you, everybody.